Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air, asking the questions you want to know with the biggest and best names in sports, like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson.
I watched our kids in the offseason. You could really tell the work ethic. Our kids have played very hard, and they put themselves in a position where they are right now.
The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa, it's our pleasure. You've always been good to us, and we're glad to be part of it.
Hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
And we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show at eradiosports.com. Ask promised, it is time to take a look ahead. We are going to preview the 2013 college football season, and what better way to kick things off than visiting with TCU's head football coach Gary Patterson, who is entering into his 13th season with the Horned Frogs. And I tell you what a journey it has been for him. He has completely transformed TCU, set a very high standard of excellence. He's the all-time winningest coach, and we certainly and sincerely appreciate the time. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Well, it is a brand new season. It is just around the corner. Another year of very big expectations. In fact, TCU at the Big 12 Media Days was selected third in the official preseason poll by the media. And I think there's a number of reasons to be excited about this year, all the young talent you have coming back and the challenge that lies ahead. But Gary, what are you looking forward to the most with this particular team and this particular season?
Well, you know, going into last season, we really didn't know that we were going to have the complications that we had injury-wise and some of the other things that went on. But probably the first thing is just having a group of guys that are a little bit older than what we've been the last 2 years since the Rose Bowl. So having a group that, you know, last year we only have six seniors really that played. We have around eight that will play this year. So everybody's still a very young football team. But just having most of our guys have been through a season already in the Big 12, kind of expect the level of competition that they have to play at and get ourselves ready to go.
What was your impression the first year in the Big 12 conference overall and just how competitive it is and truly one of the premier conferences within the country?
Yeah, there wasn't any surprises. You know, we had played a lot of the teams in the league and we understood the level of skill level and level of athletes that each university has, and it's a week-to-week situation, and we knew going in that was going to be part of it. You know, we had played them, but I think the thing for our guys, especially the young team, which we knew about but they didn't know about, we told them about it, was just, you know, at the end of the year we thought we got a little bit tired, and so, you know, just being able to handle the grind and getting a little bit older, I think, was probably the thing that the team learned, not necessarily the staff.
Talk to us about what we can expect defensively this year with this team. I know that you always take a tremendous amount of pride with that. You guys made quite an impression last year. We're talking about the Big 12. In fact, finished first in the Big 12 in total defense, second in scoring defense, and first against the run. What can we look forward to?
Well, you know, for us, you just have to get better. You know, you're not gonna get where you fool people twice. A little bit tougher non-conference schedule early numbers-wise against LSU, and then played a rain game last year against SMU. But you know, I think just for us is to understand that, you know, doing what we ever have to do to hold somebody to one less point. I told people last year that you got to learn in the Big 12 how to make people kick field goals. And, you know, keep them to three, not to seven. And you know, really that rule applies. You know, they've got some very good skill players across the board. Every team does. And you're not going to stop them. How do you control them? And how do you get yourself in a situation where you can get people off the field? And that's really what we're trying to get accomplished. And they understand the goal that, you know, unless you go out and play hard every game just like you did a year ago when you were a little bit younger, you don't give yourself a chance.
We're going one-on-one with Gary Patterson talking TCU football. Of course, the Frogs open up camp July 31st. The first practice is set for August 1st. And right now we're talking about things defensively. You guys return, what, nine starters back on D. You lose Kenny Kane and Stanley Maponga. Who are the guys that will be filling those slots?
Well, you know, by committee, you have John Koontz, which was a young man from Aledo that will be a senior defensive end, Josh Carraway, Matt Anderson, which we thought we were going to have a year ago, was out the whole season with a knee. Those three guys are back, along with you know, a couple younger guys coming in, Bryson Henderson. But, you know, everybody else in our front really comes back. With, you know, if Devontae comes back and is going to be an older, he played as a freshman, he's a lot stronger player now, older, smarter, and for him to be able to play at an extra level, because people now, they're not going to be able to double-team Stansley and give him, you're going to get to where now they're going to give him all their attention. So everybody has to be a little bit better to have the same kind of year they had a year before. And, you know, I think they're looking forward to the challenge. They've worked awful hard in the spring and in the summertime to get to that point.
Well, Devontae Fields, he's a guy that certainly can make life miserable for the opponents. Give us an update on Jason Verrett and Sam Carter.
Well, you know, Jason Verrett, what didn't do a lot in the spring, we kind of cleaned up a leg for him and doing it, but really had a late, great spring and then a summertime. Obviously, he's a guy that really his whole life has been out to prove people wrong. Sam Carter was a guy that didn't have a great freshman year, that both of those guys, you know, were first team, second team, all Big 12, that give ourselves an opportunity. Both of them coming back and playing another season obviously makes us a lot better.
There's a lot of formulas for winning in college football, but success is ultimately determined by defense. And, you know, when I think about your program, we followed it throughout the years. How have you been able to, Coach Patterson, have sustained success and maintain that high level of consistency on the defensive end?
Well, I think you got to give a lot of credit to the kind of players we can recruit in the state of Texas. You know, the speed factor of kids that can run and then big and wanting to be good. You know, if you look at the history of TCU, they've been historically have been a good defensive football team because of the kind of guys that like to come here. You know, you got to give a lot of credit to the defensive staff. And, you know, I always tell people, you look at stats, whether it be offense that scored a lot of points or a lot of yardage or defense that does the opposite, holds them low and in both categories, I think you got to give a lot of credit to the whole game plan. You know, if the offense is holding the ball and scoring points, it's a lot easier for the defense to play, not standing on the field, and vice versa. So, you know, I'm one of those guys, even though we get credit for the defense, you know, what I've been most proud of, you know, and last year even the same way, we just, you lose a quarterback, you lose your tailbacks, but just the way we've scored points and the way we went about that and finding a formula just to win. I think the thing for us is how do you find a formula that you can go win ball games with, and that's, you know, that's what we're trying to get accomplished.
And, of course, a way and a formula to win is bringing on some additional coaches that have extensive coaching experience. Tell us about DeMonte Cross, your new linebackers coach.
Well, DeMonte, you know, had coached with the Buffalo Bills, was at Kansas, had been at Iowa State, played at Missouri, brings a wealth of experience, very intense guy that, you know, really wants to learn, never been in a 4-2-5 system, but came here for the simple reason of being able to learn it and has recruited the area down here. Coach Looper grew up in Sherman, Texas, so he'd been here. His wife's from Menace, so he has unbelievable Texas roots. Was at Auburn, won a national championship, and recruited some really big-time players at Oklahoma that, you know, we all know. Des Bryant, you look at Blackman, wide receivers up there, had coached a bunch of 1,000-yard rushers. So here you have two guys that really have added a lot of chemistry and a lot of work and a lot of, really, to be honest, a lot of inspiration to the staff. You know, you bring somebody in new and they came here for the reason they feel like that we can, you know, we can do great things at TCU, and it makes us all get better because of their work ethic and how they do things.
I was going to say another wonderful addition was Kenny Perry coming from Arlington High School.
Coach Perry, which he had been he's a very renowned, known guy that was a head coach for 20-some years at Arlington Bowie, that's been in the profession for a long time, and his knowledge of the high school coaches, his knowledge of the recruiting base in the state of Texas has really already made a big difference in what we've been able to get accomplished.
Okay, so he will not serve as like a direct recruiter, but just kind of a liaison with the high schools. Is that correct?
High school, he's our high school liaison. You know, and there's some changes coming down pipe with the NCAA as far as what you name coaches and what you do, but that's what his job description is right now.
Just a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're talking to Gary Patterson, one of our favorites, the head coach with TCU. And speaking of areas of improvement, I know you're always wanting to tighten things up a little bit better on the offensive line. So I know it was a bit of a concern last year. What, you returned three starters this year. Tell us about your O-line.
Well, for us, you know, last year, basically you had three starters. You had Avion Collins that had to start, the true freshman, Tal Fabergé, which was a sophomore, but he had been at BYU, redshirted, and then had to sit out a year because he transferred. So basically he was like a true freshman. He was his first year of college football. And so, you know, you had a group that, you know, had not played together a whole lot in our groups. You basically had two guys, Blaze Foltz, our center, that basically came back that had played a lot of football, and everybody else had been young. And so for us, we lost James Dunbar for the season. And now James is back. So having possibly these guys three in the fold along with Big V from over in Halton City, that was a true freshman. You know, we had to play 17 true freshmen, and three or four of those guys had been on the offensive line. So to be able to be a year older anytime, especially going in the Big 12 with the kind of fronts that you have to play against, really makes a big difference.
TCU picked third in the official preseason Big 12 poll by the conference media. We're talking to Gary Patterson, and I think one thing is certain that the Frog fans are very excited about is the depth at the quarterback position. Casey Paho returns. You got Trevon Boykin. And as I understand, no quarterback has been determined at this point, and perhaps that you'll be platooning quarterbacks. Some say that's a dicey proposition. My question to you, Coach Patterson, is have you ever done that before throughout all your years of coaching?
Well, yeah. I mean, we used to. To be honest, my first year as coaching, you know, we always said we were going to get the number two guy in the game. And in third series against Nebraska, first game of the season, my inaugural year as a head coach, Sean Stille came in the game and on the two-yard line and play action and threw a 15-yard out for first down. And so, you know, we've done that in the past. We've run quarterbacks in to run the Wildcat formation. But, you know, really, I've been just throwing out stuff because I don't really know. We really know yet till we get in the two-a-days.
How do you go about creating a functioning quarterback platoon so that there's no confusion and everybody knows what their role is within the system and perhaps what to expect?
Well, it's easy because, you know, I've never used the word platoon. You know, we had said that possibly we may use two quarterbacks in the ball game, but as a general rule, the way we'll do it is one will end up being the starter and the other one will have a role of what he does. But the thing I think we feel comfortable with, when we came out of last spring, we felt like we only had one quarterback that we thought we could win with because Trevon was a redshirt freshman, and, you know, it really, you know, he had gotten better, but we weren't where we needed to be. And now we feel like we've had two quarterbacks that can play a high level in the Big 12 if one of them goes down. And, you know, in this time, this age and time, the way people can rush the passer, I think that's an added benefit.
Well, I think some of the good news is, of course, is that Casey's progress, as I've heard, is that there's a new look in his eye. He's worked really, really hard. And, you know, just I'm sure he's very appreciative to you for giving him a second chance. What's been the key for this new outlook that he has?
Well, I think it's, I mean, like anybody that has dealt with alcohol, I think the biggest thing is just being able to get away from it. And, you know, he came back when he came back to TCU in the spring. You know, he had color back in his face. Him and I could have conversations that we weren't having this last year, and so he was like the guy that graduated and came in early out of Brownwood, Texas. That was, you know, a good student, good player, and he, you know, eager to move on with his life. And so he's got an opportunity to graduate in December, and you know, to hopefully lead us to a lot of victories, him and Trevon, and then go about our business. But, you know, more importantly, you know, the decision we made was to see if we could help him for the rest of his life, which, I mean, in some ways that's what we were, you know, that's what coaches are supposed to do.
That's great, giving second chances to young kids. I mean, what, he's 22 years old. But I think there's one thing that you're certainly looking forward to. It's circled on the calendar. Of course, August 31st, you open up at Cowboy Stadium against LSU, and it certainly is going to be a difficult challenge, but never underestimate Gary Patterson, right?
Well, we played in big ball games. We understand the pedigree that LSU brings to town and the kind of coach that Coach Miles and his staff is. You know, a little disadvantage with the new offensive coordinator, how he's going to call ball games for us. But we know their defense. They've lost some players. We've lost some players. But, you know, it's you know, a lot of people say, why would you schedule that game? I think, you know, TCU every once in a while needs a chance to schedule that game. We have LSU on the schedule. We've got Minnesota home and home in a couple years, next year starting. We have Ohio State and we have Arkansas. So we feel like that you got to go play one of those games in your three or four non-conference games and then get in your league because it helps you get prepared for it. And, you know, the LSU game is one of those situations where, you know, does your chances of possibly not winning the game go down because of the kind of program they're? Yes. But the positives that can come out of this program from playing well, confidence in your team, winning, and in winning a ball game like this and what it escalates and what it pushes you into as far as on a national stage and understanding the kind of athletes they're going to play with and we play against, I think there's just a big upside to what we're trying to get accomplished.
Gary, you've played in Cowboy Stadium before. What do you like about it the most?
Well, obviously, kids like it. Getting a chance to play there, you know, I think it shows that you're a big-time program. I think, you know, they don't ask a lot of people to be able to play these kind of games and play them in this stadium because there's a lot of interest. And so, you know, it recruiting-wise, I don't think you can even identify the magnitude of what it does for you with your recruits in the state playing in a game. There's some people that play there, you know, just in a regular conference game, and but, you know, to kick it off or play a bowl game there is truly amazing. We did that against Oregon State a couple years ago. And, you know, just the energy and everything that was magnified by doing that in Cowboy Stadium the first game of the season paid off for us. We ended up going to the Rose Bowl. So.
And as I understand, LSU-TCU, this is the first meeting since 1968?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know,
I can share. I wasn't even born then.
You know, we had not beaten Texas at Texas since 1967. So, I mean, hopefully we can keep on dealing with the first, you know. But all of them are tough. So we just got to keep doing it.
Absolutely. We sincerely appreciate the time and good luck this season, Coach. Thank you so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
You bet. We're going to step aside much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
Did you know that Complete Production Services is one of North America's leading oilfield service providers, offering field support solutions, equipment, and well production optimization and enhancement to some of the largest oil and gas companies? Complete Production is fully committed to developing solutions for your operating environment and can handle any oilfield demands, well servicing, and rentals. Most importantly, they are committed to superior customer service and also focus on safety and the environment. Service, expertise, innovation. Complete Production Services. Join us online at CompleteProductionServices.com.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell, the fastest hour in radio. And I know I sound really excited. That's because it is the start of the college football season, and I am visiting with one of my favorite guys in the whole wide world, Jason Peter, three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. And you're probably wondering, hey, are we going to have a Big Ten update? We'll get to that momentarily. But Jason, first and foremost, you got to bring it. Come on. What about this half-game penalty for Johnny Manziel?
Yeah, I think all of the people that have issues with the NC2A, I think their issues continue to grow after this half-game suspension. And I'm one of them. I don't know, I guess, the grounds for it. They, you know, obviously they're saying he violated a bylaw, but then on the same hand, same token, the other side of the token, they're saying, you know, he didn't. And that I just don't get. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to sit you down for half a game just to show people that we actually do something here and we take this seriously, but we're not going to do anything drastic enough, at least nothing where you know, you'll miss any time for that next game that A&M has where, you know, obviously I'm talking about Alabama. Yeah, it's comical, and you know, for the people in the NCAA who come out and say, you know, we're not going to stand for this stuff, and there's change that's going on. This clearly shows that there isn't. You know, but that's the NC2A, and that's the NC2A that we've all, I think, grown to know.
I found it a bit stunning because the statement coming out saying that there was no evidence that Manziel received payments for signing autographs.
Yeah.
He signed a lot of autographs.
Yeah, I know. And you know, Curry, the old Alabama coach, he was doing an interview, and he said something, and it really, I think, hit home with me, but I think people probably heard what he said and said, you know what, he's probably right. And basically what he said was, if a player deals solely in cash, the chances are he'll get away with it. And that, you know, probably is the case here. You know, maybe there's no checks that were written. Maybe there's no paper evidence. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. You know, and look, Johnny Manziel's not the only guy. He's just the biggest guy who got caught, or at least, you know, was exposed there for a while. I just think the NCAA didn't have the evidence to hand down a more severe penalty.
Well, Jason, you are absolutely right. So we got that half-game penalty for Johnny Manziel. It's been in all the headlines. We'll be keeping a close watch on that. And we always like your quick updates on what's going on in Lincoln. Talk to us about some black shirts already handed out. 7 of them, is that true?
7 black shirts. And that goes kind of against the way that Pelini and his crew have done it, which it's always created a monster out here, because people are kind of used to doing it a certain way, and the way that it was done during my time and before was kind of the starters, or you know, however many, 7, 8, 9 guys, whoever was playing to a standard, whether they be a returning starter or somebody that just was head and shoulders above everybody else, they usually got their black shirt prior to the season or the week leading up to the first game. And Bo has done it, you know, his way, which, you know, is not just on the black shirts, but he does a lot of things kind of his way, against maybe tradition. But sometimes he'll wait until third, fourth, fifth game. I think last year it maybe was eighth or ninth game, where he feels the entire unit's playing to a certain level or standard. And the reality is, I think, you know, in the past few years, it's got to a point where he's just handing them out, because he's looking for this perfect game maybe to hand them out after. And the reality is that just doesn't come. And you know, even a bigger reality is his defenses really haven't been that good. So that's, I think, maybe why he decided, let me just get this thing out now. You know, this way I can say I've handed out black shirts. And look, it's, like I said, it's not the first time. I think in either 96, maybe it was 97, my senior year, I think Charlie McBride handed out, we had maybe 4 or 5 of us that started the year off with black shirts. And the rest of the guys, they just, you know, had to earn it over the next few weeks. But eventually, you know, all 11 and sometimes even, you know, 12 or 13 were given to the guys on that defense. And that is, you know, the most, as a defensive player at Nebraska, it's the most prized possession. I mean, you saw it up at the golf event when we put that black shirt jersey of the 95 D line up there. I mean, it's, you know, that will go for almost $10,000. So it's I know for myself and a lot of these guys, no matter what time period you played, if you're a defensive player, that black shirt is most likely your prized possession.
Absolutely. A lot of pride, a lot of tradition when you talk about the black shirts. And, of course, Nebraska opens things up on Saturday hosting Wyoming. And we've got a number of teams that I'd like to hit on, but, Jason, we're flat out of time. This is a fast-moving show this weekend. We'll catch up with you next week. Okay? Thanks, Jay.
Have me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.
The work of FCA can be summed up in 4 words: coaches, campus, camp, and community. The 4 C's are vital in fulfilling FCA's vision of seeing the world impacted for Jesus Christ through the influence of athletes and coaches.
Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Ow. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
And we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And truly, we are the fastest hour in radio. Our segments have been moving quite quickly. We've got Steve Habel, who's jumping on the phone line with Horns Illustrated right out of Austin. And I know you're very excited about the Longhorns. Of course, last year, 9-4 in the conference, 5-4. Mack Brown wants to get things headed in the right direction. Talk to us about your Longhorns.
Well, thanks for having me again, Alyssa. The Longhorns are ready. It's been an attitude of quiet confidence here during the fall drills, and they feel like they've taken a step forward to be in the picture for the national championship hunt.
Okay, they look like they've taken some necessary steps to move this program forward, to move it to the next level, because they're not accustomed to having 9-4 finishes. But I have to tell you, a bit of some surprising news, and Steve, kind of weigh in on this. A Texas senior defensive tackle, Ashton Dorsey, he transfers out of the program. What kind of insight can you provide on this?
Well, the only thing we know is that Dorsey did not show up in the 2-deep depth chart this week when it was released, and I think that it can be assumed that he was not too happy about that. The next day he transferred out. They've got some great defensive tackles, Desmond Jackson, and of course this young sophomore Malcolm Brown, who will man that spot along with Chris Whaley, the former running back, now defensive tackle. So I just think it was a matter of playing time with Dorsey. It's a shame, because I think he could have contributed. And you cannot never have enough defensive tackles on a team.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and has been a main contributor in the middle with the defensive line. So let's move things forward. Let's talk a little bit about, in terms of offensively, how are things coming together for junior quarterback David Ash?
Ashes looked great from what we saw him in fall drills. He seems to have taken the step forward to assume the leadership of this team. They're going to be running with a real paced offense, a no huddle type situation, what they call it, a tempo offense.
Yeah.
Looking for 18 seconds between plays. And this is the kind of stuff he ran in high school a couple of years ago at Belton, so he's familiar with that. And him and Coach Applewhite, the offensive coordinator, seem to be on the same page. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do, especially in what really amounts to just an exhibition game against New Mexico State this Saturday.
Yeah, I would agree. And David Ash, I would say that he, too, is probably perhaps one of the most experienced quarterbacks within the Big 12 Conference. My final question for you, Habel, is next week, though, you guys, the Longhorns, will be on the road at BYU. And as I understand, that's not always been easy, right?
It's never been easy to win at BYU. First of all, you got men playing with boys up there, literally. I mean, guys are lined up against guys that are 21.
Yeah,
it's always a good test to go to BYU. Texas will have to play well to win up there. BYU's good defensively, and it's a tough place to play.
Okay, Steve, I look forward to catching up with you in the month of October, October 12th, that is, for the Red River Rivalry. You better roll up your sleeves and get ready to go to work. Okay.
Just take a deep breath and listen.
I don't know what that's about at all. Relaxation? Are you kidding me? We'll talk soon, Steve. Thanks.
Take care.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.